get for your money. And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Well, good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and I am the broker of Movers Real Estate and the leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team. And we are here with John Nail. And John Nail, you are famously from UConn, right?
Yes, ma'am. I've been there most of my life.
Yeah. And most of your business is UConn.
It's 99% UConn.
Right. I tried to get him to build a building for me, and it was not in UConn, so... He was not real fond of traveling outside his area.
Well, when you make a commitment to build something, it takes a lot of oversight.
Yes, it does.
And I want to be close by. You really need to be by the job several times a day, and not just once a week or once a day. So that's why when I make a commitment, it's usually within about a 15-minute radius of where I operate.
Right. Do you know, for folks who don't know who you are, I thought I might mention a few things, and then you tell me. I have always known the name Johnny Nail. And Johnny was really your dad, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And he has – is he still with us?
Oh, yes. He has a Midwest cast stone.
Yes, the cast stone, mm-hmm. the pretty flower bed liners if you're upscale, and the around the windows and the porch posts that are cast concrete,
and
right?
Columns and – and caps, and it's a very, very tedious, critical thing to make. It's cast stone.
I know when my youngest son was getting his Eagle Scout project done, your dad donated some caps to his project.
Well, he just donated a sign for the Spanish Cove Retirement Center in UConn.
Really?
Yes, it was a garden that I helped oversee for them for no charge. And he donated the sign for that as well, just recently.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's nice to have a giving family that you come from, so you learn by example, and you're a very giving person.
Yes, ma'am.
But, John, you are a developer.
Yes, ma'am.
And you are a builder.
Yes.
And you have held the position of president of the Home Builders Association, Central Oklahoma Home Builders Association,
COBA.
Right?
COBA. And I'm also on the national, work with the National Home Builders as well.
Really?
I'm the chairman of the Custom Home Builder Committee.
Wow.
And so we've got our spring meeting in Washington, D.C. coming up in June. So,
you know, I've only been to one international builder show in Vegas.
Yes, ma'am.
Of the Home Builders Association. And it was incredible, the stuff that the new stuff they're coming out with. The old stuff they've improved, things that you're not going to see anywhere probably for at least 2 or 3 years from now.
I think this year that was over 1 million square feet. We had the convention again in Las Vegas of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You can't only see it all.
It was pretty good, right?
Oh, it's really good. Really good stuff.
So, okay, well, we promised the folks we'd talk a little bit about development, so let's start there.
Okay.
And then I know you... you have a passion for different things. I told you you could talk about anything you wanted to. So let's start with development.
Well, development, first of all, when you find a piece of property, you got to make sure there's water and sewer there. You can find a great piece of property, but if water and sewer are not close by, you've got a serious problem.
Right.
So when you start searching or thinking you're looking for a piece of property around the Oklahoma City area or any UConn or Norman or Edmond, and you're going to have regular city lots, you've got to make sure you do your homework and there's sewer and water available.
Yeah, electricity's pretty much everywhere. Yeah. You can get it run pretty well. But water and sewer are very difficult sometimes. You don't even have to have natural gas because total electric's a possibility, right?
Right, right. But that's, electric, of course, is important, and gas, but the sewer and water is critical. Okay. And if you don't have... can't get sewer there, you have to do the aerobic system, which requires about an acre of land.
Right.
And so...
Inexpensive.
Inexpensive, yes.
Yeah. So we learned from, I'm trying to remember the name, Red something sewer service, that Redland, maybe, I can't remember, But we learned that probably 30% of our metro area is on sewer. I mean, is on septic tank.
Is that right?
Yeah. 30%. So that's a lot.
I haven't heard that figure before, but that's, yes, it is.
That's a lot. But city sewer, far preferable.
Yes. There's no maintenance and nothing going out. And
what are the steps you have to do? Surely you have to get approval from governmental agencies about dividing land up.
Right.
So how do you go about that?
Well, if I was going to buy a piece of property, first of all, I'll make sure there's water and sewer there.
Right.
Then you get a preliminary and take it to the city, a preliminary plat, a layout of the lots and those type of things. And they have to give you approval, and then you move on to the final plat, final drawing.
A lot of folks have contacted me over the years and said, well, I want to develop this 60 acres that Grandpa left me, and it'll be out in the middle of nowhere. And that's the first thing I ask them, how many houses do you think you're going to put on that? How many times are you going to divide it? And they'll go, well, you know, you can get at least, 40 houses on 10 acres. And I'm going, do you have water and sewer? Because if you don't have water and sewer, you got to have at least an acre, acre. But sometimes it goes even deeper than that. Sometimes they don't let you do it because the infrastructure is not there, not only just water and sewer, but fire and police protection.
Right, right. So it's not just, like you say, it's not just there's a piece of property, I want to put some houses on it. We were in a winery in California, Napa, and one of these really cool wineries, I mean, it was A+. The guy had bought the property years ago, like 1960 or something like that, to put houses on. And he was doing all the dirt work, and while he was doing it, they passed some restrictions that he couldn't do it. So he ends up with this really cool winery, but that's what you're talking about right there. Just because there's a piece of property and you have a desire to put some houses on it, the city officials can make or break you on something like that. You
right.
have to get that approval.
Well, and is it easier for county property than it is for something incorporated into a city?
I've never developed in a county situation. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's easier and less expensive.
We're in a county right now,
okay.
Just on the edge of Edmond.
Okay.
But we're county, and the thing we love about it is we pay 4.5% sales tax for anything delivered to us. So we don't pay a city sales tax.
Okay.
So that's great.
Yes, ma'am.
If you're buying a refrigerator, that saves you a lot of money.
Yes.
And then it has its benefits to be in the county, but you can't call 911 and get the police department out there on the county. It is this county sheriff. They cover a lot of ground, so it's not as an immediate response. And kind of same thing with the fire department, a little bit more widespread.
Yeah, that's something to consider, yeah, for sure.
For sure. But we're building onto our house right now.
Okay.
And I had to go down to the county to get the building permit and the plans approved. So it's the same process, and we have to have the same inspections.
I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah, like right, we're preparing this week for the framing inspection.
Okay.
Waiting on shower valves to come in so that we can have our framing inspection.
By the way, those inspections are what you want. A lot of people, or many people, may think, well, I can build out of an incorporated area where you don't have to have inspections.
No, you need inspections.
The inspections are your friend.
Yes, because they will catch things
yes.
sometimes.
Yes.
So, okay, we've got more to talk about, but the development, the building, and why you even should buy a home. More with John Nail when we come back with Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and we are here with John Nail, developer, builder, person extraordinaire, I must say. John, do you remember how we first met? You appeared at my radio show, and I didn't book you. My assistant said she didn't book you. You didn't know who had called you. And it was just like, God put it on the calendar for us.
That was bizarre.
That was bizarre. We still have not figured that out, but we're so glad it happened.
Well, you made it happen, okay? This guy just shows up. And
I know. It was really weird.
And to this day, I can't remember who it was that called me and booked that. But
I can't either, but
it did happen.
That's awesome, though. But you are a good individual. You think right, you know? You consider other people's feelings.
Well, I was taught that way by my parents.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, we're talking about development, things to think about.
Okay.
If you just have a piece of land and you want to develop it, I know you want sewer and water because otherwise it's just too expensive to develop most land. How about roads? Do you put in curb and gutter when you develop, or do you just put asphalt in?
I've always put in curb and gutter and concrete streets, but that's something to think about as well. Wherever you're going to develop, what they require. UConn requires concrete. And I'm glad they do because it's a really great street. It's more expensive, but it lasts for a long time.
Yeah, I went to a big development out northeast. It was a mile, this development. It was gated, but everyone had like decent size, like 5 and 10 acres each, and it had asphalt streets. They were building a house, and it was over 110 degrees for a prolonged period of time that year. And the big dump trucks and concrete trucks drove on those streets, and when they parked, they just sank into that asphalt because it was so hot and pliable.
Well, when you have a gated area, you can get by with doing less.
Because there's less traffic on it.
Well, it's because the city doesn't inspect. If you have a gate, if you're inside that gate, you're responsible for the streets, those that live inside the gate.
Right.
And so they don't require as much. They're not a city street, so you don't have the city standards.
Right.
But a lot of developers will still do city standards inside a gate, but you're not required to follow city standards because those that live inside the gate are responsible for everything inside that gate. That's what you got to think about, too, when you move into something like that. But you can have a really good asphalt street if you have good underlayment. You prepare the soil properly. And that's very expensive to bring in this lime, and they grind it in with the dirt, and they make it real hard. And right. So what will happen a lot of times, if that's not done, and you just put something on top of even concrete, but if you put something on top of that soil that hasn't been prepared properly, you'll have that problem.
Yeah, you can't just smooth out the dirt. And lay something on top of it.
So that process is really half of it. When you see concrete or asphalt giving, a lot of times that wasn't done or done properly.
Okay.
And then the thickness of the asphalt, you can have different thicknesses of asphalt laid down.
How thick is the concrete on streets in a gated area? Probably 8 inches?
No, it's 6 maybe, 5 or 6.
Okay.
It depends.
Right.
I forget what the city requires on the concrete thickness, but in fact, I've got a commercial building, retail building, and I poured my parking lot 5 and 6 inches thick with a gravel base underneath.
Wow.
And so I built it for the long haul, but it's much more expensive. The thicker you, naturally, the more material it takes.
Boy, concrete has really gone up.
Oh, it's gone up.
A lot.
It sure has.
We're getting ready to pour a lot of concrete in it. Is like twice as much as what we had anticipated.
Yes, with the inflationary things we've had the last couple of years. And
right.
It has.
So, okay. So how do you decide where the streets go? I mean, just the layout.
Well, you have to hire a good engineer.
And what? And a civil engineer?
Yes, civil
okay.
engineer. They help you with that process.
So a civil engineer has a lot to do with drainage.
A lot to do with drainage and a lot to do with how to lay the streets out. And
where to put the sanitary sewer, does the city decide that?
The engineer does, civil engineer does.
Okay. And because you can't just have water collecting in an area.
Right.
Right.
You got to have, like I have in our subdivision in UConn, I have several ponds to catch the water. Not only do we use it for beautification, but it's there for a purpose to catch that drainage.
Right.
And release so much water in a certain period of time.
So you're familiar, I'm sure, with the GIS map, right? So let's tell people what that is.
Well,
it kind of tells about where the water naturally drains.
And the federal government plays a role in that as well.
Right.
If you have that running through your property and they have certain designated a certain situation that you may not be able to develop it or cut into that drainage and build a pond.
Right.
So that's very important as well. Your engineer, your civil engineer should know those things.
Right. Do you ever deal with Blackbird Environmental, Clint Porter?
Right.
Okay. He's like family to us.
Okay.
And he has this business where wetlands and counting eagles. He's on a project now where he's counting a certain number of eagles in certain areas and stuff. And he's hired by private individuals that are developing because you can't disturb wetlands. If you do disturb them, you've got to have offset somewhere else.
Right.
And so he kind of accommodates that.
So, yes, it's developing a piece of land is really complicated with the federal law, state, and city laws, and
yeah,
and very, very expensive as well, especially today with all the inflationary
things. And used to, the land itself would account for about a third to 40%, but then the development would account for that same amount too. Mm-hmm. So there ends up being a little sliver of profit in it if you're lucky and you sell it all.
And it comes at the end.
Yes, it does.
And not at the beginning or in the middle. And you pay tax on each lot you sell, whether you're not making a profit yet, but they count it as you're making a profit. So if you have, say, 50 lots and your profit really comes in toward the last 10 lots,
right?
You start paying the tax on the first lot you sell. So you really go in the hole.
Right.
You're not making any money on the first lot you sell, but you're paying taxes on it like you are.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about the decision to gate a property and make it private streets or not to gate, just to do a subdivision without gated. What goes into that?
I've got them with gates and without gates,
right.
and they're all really fine subdivisions and very beautiful. I don't do any scientific thing. I just kind of determine where I'm developing and what I think about it and then make a decision to do gate or not. I haven't really done an analysis. I just kind of go by my intuition.
Your neighborhoods, when you say beautification, your neighborhoods are beautiful.
And that was my wife and I worked together.
Right.
And that was our biggest priority, is to have something beautiful that looks even better as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I really believe our subdivisions look better today than we first developed them.
Well, I know you developed Stone Mill in Yukon, mm-hmm. and it's a big subdivision. It's got several phase one, phase two, phase three, and phase four, I think, if not more. But give us a name of another development.
We have Stone Creek on the west side of Yukon. It's over on just west of Garth Brooks.
Okay.
And it's a smaller subdivision, but very beautiful and very beautiful houses.
Right.
It's 55 lots over there, but we have some. Our first one, and it was really a difficult, the property was hard to work with, but we made it. You know, a lot of times something more difficult can even come out better than if it was easy. And when I say difficult, rugged, the terrain's rugged and different types of things, and it was very rugged, but it turned out very beautiful.
Yeah.
You enter it with a beautiful pond and walking trail around it, some stone entryway. So
that's awesome. Now, I told you could talk about anything you wanted to talk about. What do you want to talk about?
Well, you said something about covenants, CCR.
Yes.
How important they are.
Right.
And so I looked up the word covenant.
Well, and you can hold that
okay. Until
after our break. That's our word of the day.
Fantastic.
So, but CCR stands for Conditions, Covenants, and Restrictions.
Okay.
And it's a set of rules on platted property. And a lot of people don't understand what the word platted means because they kind of think it's in the city or not in the city. Mm-hmm. But platted property means it's part of a defined area that has met the governmental restrictions and
yes. It
has rules.
Yes.
And the rules, if you're going to live in that area or purchase land, you don't even have to live there. You could purchase land. You're required to do certain things.
Well, there's standards.
Right.
And you want the standards to hold your property values.
Right. You don't want a salvage yard next door if you've got a $700,000 house that, and you've got kids playing out in the yard and stuff like that. You don't want something like a salvage yard next door.
Or if you have a $250,000 house that's your pride and joy and that you're keeping up and maintaining and creating those memories, and right. then one day you want to sell it and move up.
Right.
If you don't have the standard of that covenant, that property value is going to decrease, not increase.
Yeah. And, boy, that can happen. Now, when you have covenants, does that mean you have a neighborhood association?
Yes.
Okay. Yours do.
Yes.
Okay. But platted property doesn't always have a neighborhood association. You know, it is, you have CCRs, but you don't have the HOA with the bylaws. So sometimes you have platted property that just, you have, it runs with the land. The CCRs, if you buy property and it's got, it's platted, it's going to have some CCRs, covenants, conditions, and restrictions. Actually, I didn't say that in the right order, I don't think. But anyway, we're going to talk a lot about that when we return right here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins here with John Nail. It is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to replacing a whole roof, whether it's residential or commercial. And they do a fabulous job and stand behind their work. Their big thing is ice and water shield. Is that important, John Nail?
Sure is, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Our word of the day is covenant. Covenant is part of the CCRs. It is conditions, covenants, and restrictions that run with land, the rules, right? So what is a covenant?
If you look the definition up, a usual, formal, solemn, and binding agreement.
An agreement, a promise. Yeah, for sure. So when you buy a piece of land that has CCRs, which is any platted land is going to have CCRs, you need to read them.
And not take them lightly and embrace them, really, because they hold the standard for the neighborhood.
Right.
And if you have those standards, it holds its value. And that's a lot of times the most valuable thing that a couple has is their home and building up the equity. And it's the hedge against inflation.
Right.
And then everybody wants to step up to the next level. Most do, some don't. And if you're going to stay there, you're concerned about the value. And if you want to sell, you're concerned about the value. So those covenants need to be embraced.
Well, and it's the quality of life that you have, too.
Yes.
I mean, many neighborhoods nowadays do not allow street parking overnight.
Right.
And street parking is a problem. You have to do it if you have so many guests in your house.
Right.
You're having a baby shower or something like that. You're going to have street parking. But when nighttime comes, there can be no street parking in many neighborhoods. That's an example. What's another example of a covenant that somebody might disagree with?
Well, an outdoor building.
Right.
Instead of many covenants have it where it has to have the same material, like brick or stone, as your house.
Yes.
And some want to move it just something that's built out of wood in the back. And there's some really nice ones like that. However, if the standards say it has to be that same material, it'll hold its value better. It won't deteriorate.
Right. And some of them have fences. There's a certain fence, or it has to be a certain material. It cannot be obstructing a neighbor's view. Say you back up to a lake, and your neighbor backs up to a lake almost. They have water view but not waterfront.
Right.
Well, they want to see the lake too, so you can't obstruct the view of neighbors. That's another. Now, these are not all given in every neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Every neighborhood has a unique set of covenants. And when you buy that, you agree.
Like square footages of the house that can be built there. There's a minimum square footage.
Right, and a maximum number of stories. Sometimes it will allow two stories, but not three.
Right.
You know, the height of the building.
And a person may not agree with those covenants, but if you sign the agreement and that standard that everybody else is living by.
Now, do you have to actually sign the covenants? Well, you don't. You actually are you purchase the property means you're purchasing the covenants.
Great. You're not even signing the covenants. They come with the property. You don't have to sign. You don't sign. When you buy the property, they're there. They're attached to that property.
Right. So you have to abide by them, whether you're the first owner, second, or the 16th owner of that property. You have to abide by the covenants.
And I think you said something earlier about you should read the covenants. And many people may not read those covenants.
Most don't read the covenants.
But they need to be read. That way you understand what you're agreeing to when you purchase the property.
And many things are like, can you have chickens? Well, most of them do not allow chickens, but you have to read the covenants to find out. And we as real estate, as a real estate broker, I refuse to take the responsibility of reading someone's covenants for them. Right. I can read them for myself so that I know what I'm selling, but I'm not going to interpret those.
Well, there's too much there for you to – the owner must read them because you can't give 20 pages of information out.
And sometimes they're even longer than 20 pages for sure.
Yes, it could be 40. It could be whatever.
Right. And sometimes it's up to interpretation, you know. And I don't want to interpret it one way, sell a property to someone and then have the neighborhood come down on them because they can't build what they intended to build. So, you know, anytime you purchase covenants.
And the reason why the covenants are there, you have to have standards. And the standards hold your value.
Right.
And the value is a big part of the home.
Yeah.
Either if you're going to live there your entire life or you're going to plan on selling it in 5 years and moving up. You want the value of your house to increase. And I've known different areas that years and years ago that were developed without covenants.
Right.
And it's really devastating what can happen if you don't have the covenants.
Yes, because people can just do whatever they want to, you know.
Right.
I know that we lived in a neighborhood and 89ers Day, my little brother loaned me two little miniature horses for my kids to ride in the parade because they were tiny little kids and tiny little horses. And after the parade, I took those horses and put them in the backyard until we could get a trailer to pick them up because we learned our lesson. You don't take them in a van because that's how we got them there. We took them in our conversion van, and we definitely had to have that thing carpet cleaned
That's a story I haven't heard before. That's pretty good.
So we waited for a trailer to take them back home. Okay. But the neighbors, one of them said, you can't have horses in this neighborhood. And I was going, well, you're right. And as soon as that trailer gets here, they're leaving. So, but the restrictions in the neighborhood, you know, when you buy in a neighborhood, the covenants, you can agree. It's a promise between two people, basically.
And that's a covenant.
Yes, a covenant. The restrictions are broad sometimes and sometimes very specific. it's restricted against having a home made out, a non-conforming home. Let's just put it that way.
Great
point. Like back in the 80s, was it 80s? They had the dome homes. Right?
Yes.
Geodesic dome. And in a typical neighborhood, you could not build a geodesic dome home because it was a non-conforming home. It was not a traditional, contemporary Mediterranean or something like that. It was just shaped totally different, right?
Excellent point. A lot of people don't go back that far.
Like right.
But you as a realtor, you knew about that. And I experienced some of that with the dome.
Wow. Did you sell lots to somebody?
No, I didn't know. I was just knew of that going on at the time.
Right, right. And underground homes.
Right.
Can you build an underground home in a neighborhood? Well, read your CCRs and you can find out. So if you want to be a part of our conversation, we've got a little bit of time left. Give us a call. 840-1000. It's 405-840-1000. Okay, so home ownership. Why should someone bother to own a home?
The word itself, home ownership. You own it. We have the greatest country on earth for home ownership. It's mine. And where are your childhood memories? In a home.
Right.
Even adult memories are in a home. You know, a home creates memories. It's mine. I build my equity through there.
Definitely.
It's a great hedge against inflation. Think about the first, I sold a house in Yukon in 1997 for $78 a square foot. And man, it was a beautiful, beautiful home. Today, it's $200 a foot.
Right.
So
I know.
You have to, the individual has a hard time fighting inflation on their own. You just can't do it.
Well, I mean.
Well, you can do it, but with the house, with the home, that's why it's a great investment. It's a hedge against inflation.
Right. And, you know, you buy your home that you live in differently than you buy investment property. Yes. Investment property, it's all about the cost to operate and the income potential for that property. But when you buy your own home, you buy for your desires, your wants, your family needs. And if you're smart, you also keep in mind that value of that property so that you buy something that will resell later and for the highest price. Right?
And the word of the week, the covenants, is part of helping make that happen. And you know, if you say you talk about an investment property and you have an investment property and I'm renting it from you.
Right.
Well, those costs you're talking about could make that payment go up
right.
for me in a year or 6 months. I buy this house with a 30-year mortgage. It's a fixed rate. I know what my payment is. There's no surprises.
Right. Well, the only thing that changes on your payment is your escrow account, which is your taxes and your insurance.
That's true.
Now, everyone's going to be squawking about this time of year, actually, because usually they reevaluate those escrow accounts in January and February, and your payments start going up because you didn't have enough reserves last year to renew your insurance. Insurance went way up last year. So your payment's going to go up to pay what you didn't have the year before and your anticipated insurance this year. So that's the only part of your payment that goes up.
Yes.
Is your taxes and your insurance if you're on a fixed rate mortgage. Okay, we've got another round to go right after this with John Nail on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. By the way, thank you for listening in to us. Every Saturday morning we're here live talking to a guest that knows a lot about homes and real estate. And today we have John Nail. What is the name of your company? Nail Construction or something like that?
It's John Nail Homes.
John Nail Homes. Okay. Well, you build luxury homes.
Yes, my wife and I do care.
Yes. And they're just gorgeous. And I love to do a resale of a John Nail home because they're built right. You don't have all the settlement issues. Typically, they're a little ahead of their time on design as well.
Well, I learned that from my dad. I was in the real estate business when I was 20 years old, way back. And I went to work for a real estate company back then and had the books that came out.
The multi-list books.
Multi-list books. And then I had the computer that printed them out.
Right.
And when there would be one of my dad's houses come up for sale, it'd say Johnny Nail built house.
Yes.
So I learned the value of that from my dad way back in the early 80s.
Yeah, and some builders, when you're listing a house, you don't put the builder if you know it because it's not a plus. But other builders, you put the name on there. If you're reselling a Johnny Nail house or John Nail house at this point, you put it on there because everyone knows the construction is good. The design is good. The roof was built right. You don't have a bunch of dead valleys up there.
Right.
So the value of a name.
Well, if Carrie and I, we take it personal when we build a house.
Right.
It means something to us. We're sincere about it. And we try to hire the right people and get the right materials.
Right.
And then supervise it correctly.
And the supervision has a lot to do with it. These builders that have superintendents all over town that to oversee, I've met some of these superintendents are probably excellent. I've met many that really didn't know how to build a house.
Well, like you say, there's a lot of good superintendents out there.
Yes, yes.
You know, your commercial has superintendents as well.
Right.
That oversee products, and then builders do. So I have nothing wrong with that.
Right.
There's a lot of great superintendents. But Carrie and I, we superintend our own projects. Now, if you're going to build a great deal of houses, a super quantity type thing, you have to have superintendents.
Right.
But we build enough we can supervise them ourselves.
Well, and you do a beautiful job of them, by the way. Okay.
Hot, hot, hot.
It is time for our Smokin' Hot Deal, brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill. Casa Perico, by the way, have you been to the one in Yukon?
I have not.
You need to. It is the little orange building right on Route 66, 305 East Main.
I've driven by there, and my wife and I said, man, they did a really cool outdoor area.
Patio area.
I mean, first class.
Yes.
From a construction guy just driving by. So I thought we got to stop by there just by the appearance of it. I heard someone say one time, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
With what care they've taken to that outside patio shows me they're pretty serious about what they do.
Well, it's an old Brahms store, and they have an outside patio they built on, and that was specific. I sold them that property, and they definitely cared about not only the quality of the food, but they care about the quality of the environment, the atmosphere, you know, their newest one is on May Avenue, just north of Hefner Road, and it's great.
Well, in atmosphere.
That's atmosphere.
Part of the game.
And they've got a patio there, too.
Okay.
So that's great. So Casa Perico Mexican Grill bringing us our Smokin' Hot Deal. We've got several properties that I could bring you today, but what I want to invite you to do is to go to my website. It's BeckyIvins.com and click on look for your own home. There are, first of all, it's an eye right into the live multi list. So if something sells and it goes pending right in front of you and it disappears from being active, you're going to know about it live. Our listings are on there. And we have the other multi-list listings. So whatever you're looking for in a home, we can personalize that for you and find it for you and give you a lot of control of the search. So that's our Smokin' Hot Deal brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill. We've got about 4 minutes left. Let's talk about home ownership a little bit more. When you say a hedge against inflation, you can't control your rent amount. But you can control how much your house payment is, right?
Yes, and like you say, taxes and insurance goes up. But the taxes go up means your property value is going up.
Yes.
So even that may not seem like a good thing, but it is.
Right.
I just love home ownership. I was able to build my first house because my dad was a builder at 19 years old.
Wow.
So I've been...
You've been in the business since you were a tyke.
Owning houses is the business I've been in. I mean, my wife and I, we built several houses. So home ownership is a great thing. Everybody likes a dream, right? You have a dream for, my dad once told me, memories are what life's about. Houses create memories. But how about dreaming of something, of another level or another type of house? Man, that dream pushes you forward.
And sometimes it's a dream, not even moving up, but moving down. I've got a lot of friends who have big houses, and you move to a smaller house, and that's your dream, is not to have all this to keep up.
to me, square footage is not the, it's important to wherever you are in your life, but it's the quality of the house. It's the personalization of the house. It's putting your heart into it.
Right.
And putting your desires into it, the color of paint and carpet and flooring. That's what home ownership is I'm able to put my stamp on it. And even the type of grass you have, I like fescue. I just overseed it with fescue. It's even the type of grass you want in your yard. It's yours.
You can do what you want.
You have
within the restrictive covenants.
Yes.
And the HOA bylaws if you're in an HOA.
Yes.
And those are two different documents.
Yes.
I mean, you're governed by the state ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
You're governed by the city that you're in as to things you can and cannot do. And you're governed, like you can't fire off a rocket in most cities. So you're restricted against that, not by CCRs, but by city ordinances, right?
And they need to be embraced because they, again, help you hold your value.
Right.
And those, you may not always agree with them, but the collective group does, and then you get to hold your value of your property.
John, you have been delightful.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you.
Very informative. So if you want to be in a good neighborhood that holds its value, you might want to call John Nail.
There's a lot of good value out there, a lot of neighborhoods.
And you came not to promote yourself.
No way, I did not. I promote home ownership.
There you go.
And striving for having that first home, or as you say, moving down to that certain square footage. But no, I'm a home owner promoter.
Okay? There you go. I'll tell you, we've got next week, we have got Jerry Dirksen, I believe Jerry, my appliance guy.
Okay.
He works at Hahn Appliance, and it was really hard to replace the Youngs over at Modern Home Appliance when they retired. But Jerry's my guy. If you want to know what's new in appliances, tune in next week because that's going to be a fun discussion. Jim Ivins, sing us out.
May each day in the week be a good day. May the Lord always watch over you, and may all of your hopes turn to wishes, and may all of your wishes come true.